Well, in an apparent BBC report, a Pakistani neighbor living near Osama bin Laden's compound in Pakistan identifies the man in the video released by the Pentagon, which reportedly shows Osama bin Laden watching himself on TV, as Akbar Khan and not Osama bin Laden. The man interviewed tells the BBC about the man in the video. This is what he says. He is my neighbor. His name is Akbar Khan. He owns the house. I know him very well. Does it get any weirder? Up next, Dr. Steve Pachanek joins us. We're going to be talking about his work as one of the world's most experienced international crisis managers and hostage negotiators. Stand by on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you a little bit more about our special guest tonight, Dr. Steve Pachanek. He's one of the world's most experienced international crisis managers and hostage negotiators, as I mentioned. He was the first psychiatrist to ever receive a PhD focusing on international relations. And during his career as a senior State Department official, he utilized his unique abilities and expertise to develop strategies and tactics that were instrumental in resolving major events and conflicts in Asia, the Middle East, Latin America, Europe, and here in the United States. He's currently an advisor to the Department of Defense. First-time guest, Dr. Steve Pachanek. Steve, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, George. I'm very good, and thank you for that lovely introduction and for inviting me on your show.
I look forward to this. I heard you with our friend Alex Jones and told my producers, you know what, I've got to get Dr. Steve on the show, and so I'm glad they got this all done for us.
Oh, that's so kind of you. I certainly miss your area of the country. I know it very well. I used to work at the RAND Corporation, and Hollywood used to go on the 101 and take that exit.
It's still bumper to bumper, Steve.
Oh, really? It hasn't gotten any better.
No, not at all. If anything, it's probably more congestion. Tell us a little bit, before we get into all these incredible stories that you've investigated and been part of, tell me about you, because you're just as important, I think, as many of the things we're talking about. So set the stage. Tell us about your relationship with Tom Clancy. Well, go ahead.
I don't want to say I'm just as important. I'm an American. I'm just like anybody else, but I've had the opportunity to serve our country in a very unusual way. I trained in Harvard in psychiatry, and at the same time at MIT, thanks to my veterans benefit, many decades ago, not because I was so smart, but quite frankly, Harvard wasn't that good in psychiatry, so it was easy for me to get a PhD in national relations. And what made the PhD unusual was not only that I was a psychiatrist, but MIT at the time, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, was an unusual school that at that time had been funded by the CIA and was specifically designed to train people like myself and others, not necessarily to join the CIA, but to develop an expertise in political psychology, propaganda, national character, and what's been lost. And it gets back to the issues we'll be talking about now in the world of intelligence in national security, not due to anybody's fault, just as a result of the increasing technology, is the fact that we no longer really understand national character, group dynamics, individual dynamics, the ethnic differences, and, you know, what is really the difference between Sunni, Shiite, Alawite, and those issues, what I was trained in when I came out. I had tried to recruit me into the intelligence community, per se, and I said, no, thank you very much, since I paid for my education, but I remained in the military, and then I was picked up by a very unusual individual by the name of Lawrence Eagleburger, who was then the Undersecretary of State under Nixon and Ford. And he offered me the opportunity to be what's called a Deputy Assistant Secretary for Management. And in return, 30 years ago, there was very little known about terrorism. And I was fortunate enough to get into that business very quickly. And unfortunately, the first episode that occurred was Arafat had assassinated one of our ambassadors in North Africa. And immediately I got involved in that. Nobody really knew the strategies and tactics and the issues that would have been involved or any policies. At that time, we didn't have really the policy of no negotiation, but only on the condition, if you have hostages, we're allowed to give you tactical support for humanitarian. That evolved as a result of myself and others who were involved. And then we got involved in many other episodes, PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, George Chabash, Hawatmi. Eventually, that turned into a major occupation, and then I got involved because the FBI called me in on a hostage situation where three buildings were taken in Washington, D.C., in the Carter administration, and I literally had to use the Quran to work the Islamic fundamentalist who was in charge. And after 36 hours, we were able to release 500 hostages from the Muslim mosque, from the B'nai B'rith and City Hall. So some publicity came in. I wasn't seeking publicity because I really didn't want to explain what I had to do in order to manipulate the situation or manage the perception. And subsequently, I left, and I had asked President Carter to leave because he was intrusive, which had came back to haunt me later on in the Iran hostage situation, where I was ordered to go with Ramsey Clark. And I refused, and I left, and then went into private practice and subsequently in the business. I came back. I was brought out to the RAND Corporation, which many of you know out there on, in Santa Monica, by a very talented individual who had worked for Nixon by the name of Dr. Richard Solomon, who's now the president of U.S. Institute of Peace and who was a China expert. At that time, without warning you, he'd asked me if I would develop the psychological profile and strategy and tactics for the psychological warfare of taking down the Soviet Union. And it resulted in about 150 pages, and he and I worked on it. And subsequently, ironically, the former governor of California, Reagan, became the president of the United States, and I was brought back in to implement this with the help of the CIA, very unusual individuals who are now dead, but open source without revealing their secrets. Basically, they were very talented individuals who were at that time national security advisors. And subsequently, we were able to use various elements without using force, including finances, the Pope, music, and all types of other variables and national character to take down the Soviet Union very gradually.
Did you expect that to happen the way it did, Steve, the takedown?
No. You know, Joe, that's an excellent question. No. In my business, you're fortunate to live out the day, basically. You really don't know. It's very arrogant of me or anyone else to presume that we're going to be successful. But I think one of the reasons why I was given the opportunity more than anything else, that as a physician, and those physicians out there in your audience will understand this, we're trained for uncertainty. And we don't have time to really collect a collective opinion or a group analysis of a situation, although there is input that comes in a crisis situation, for example, the Hanafi Muslim or in the Soviet Union. You have to decide which way you can go, and you're leading other groups as well and making determinations that are very quick, and you can't necessarily second-guess yourself. And in those days, the CIA was exceedingly good. We had a very strong national security advisor, and under Reagan, as you know, and it was very effective. Mm-hmm. I don't take the credit for it. I say it was a group effort because there were really a lot of individuals involved, but The basic plan was developed at the RAND Corporation under the leadership of Dr. Solomon, who's now the president of the U.S. Institute of Peace.
You know, this takedown of the Soviet Union and what's starting to happen now is absolutely incredible. I mean, this story that apparently was on the BBC just a few hours ago, Steve, talks about a Pakistani neighbor who lived next to this compound there who says, "Now, the guy in the video is not Osama bin Laden. It's my neighbor, Akbar Khan." And I'm looking at this going, what the heck? What's going on here? I mean, well, is it this baffling, or is it right under our nose and we just can't see it?
Well, no, what's happening is, unfortunately, I'm defying, but not really, because, as you know, your friend Alex George brought me on the radio a week ago. And brought me in because 10 years ago, when 9/11 occurred, I said, look, this is something I teach at the War College and elsewhere, which is what's called basically the attack. It's called deception, denial, false flag, and stand down. I don't want to get into that too often. But I predicted at that time that it wasn't very hard. As a physician, I had known Osama bin Laden had been seen by physicians from the CIA in Dubai at the American Hospital. And I knew at that time, it was no great secret, quite frankly, that Osama had what's called Marfan syndrome. And many of you in the audience can look it up. It's spelled M-A-R-F-A-N. And actually, one of our presidents, Abraham Lincoln, had it. They're very tall individuals who very tall, very thin, long hands, a long a jaw, Modigliani type of face, and they have connective tissue disease. So unfortunately, those people who have it, and I'm not bemoaning Osama's death, but they die. It's not a very long lifespan from the time of diagnosis to the time of death, maybe 4 to 6 years. Mm-hmm. And what was obvious to most and should have been obvious to the press and the American public was the fact that he had renal dialysis machine. Well, you can't run a lot with a renal dialysis machine. I can assure you the people in the audience who unfortunately have to use it will tell you they're very conscripted. So the storyline in the intelligence community that Osama bin Laden was alive and had attacked our country was totally false. It wasn't something that I was revealing or a whistleblower. At the time, I'm a civilian. I've been in the intelligence community over 20, 30 years. But I knew that in order to mobilize the American public under Bush Jr., you had to create a bad man. What was really ridiculous, George, was the fact that in that storyline that we were attacked by Osama bin Laden, not only was he already dead, would subsequently dead in Tora Bora, and I predicted that, and then Alex Jones called me up and said, your prediction's correct, and it would be used for political purposes. But let's go back to 2001 when it occurred. I said, not only will this be a tragedy in America because the CIA, through probably SOLIC, Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict at the Pentagon, created this story in line with Bush and Cheney and the neocons, that this was an American tragedy that really was the reason for us to go to war. And it was precipitating us in a way that the American public was mobilized in a very unfair way by attacking our own people. This was really the first time we had attacked our own people, although Rumsfeld came out the next day after I said it publicly, shame on you, and you've committed a criminal act against the American public. But Rumsfeld came out the next day stupidly saying, accusing him own self, he said, well, if Dr. Pechenik or those believe that this was a Republican trick, then they should really accept the fact that Pearl Harbor was also a standout and false flag. And, of course, it was no accident that his deputy, Paul Wolfowitz, was trained in the specialty of Pearl Harbor and standout and false flag at the University of Chicago under Wolfowitz. So the point is very simply this, that at that point, when you started to create the storyline or fable or a cover story the way the CIA had and other elements of the intelligence community, which really had degraded over the 20, 30 years that I had been involved in the beginning, and you can't accuse all of the people in the intelligence
community.
It's some. And under the Bush administration, they had this storyline that made no sense. And not only did we have Osama bin Laden, who eventually died within 6 months, and was dead and is now dead, and this is the only attack I know of where you've attacked a dead man. But at the same time, the storyline went crazy, and basically we had another villain, and that was Saddam Hussein. So you had this intelligence community create two villains at one time, and Cheney stupidly but characteristically tried to explain how Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, as did Bush Jr., when in fact there were no weapons. So what's happening is that the American public, which has been treated as if we were stupid, ignorant, and I consider myself part of it, I said, listen, I'm indignant. I don't care what my training is, whether I'm a doctor or not a doctor. I'm just an American citizen who's trying to make a living. But don't pull the shenanigans on me and don't make this nonsense storyline that makes no sense. And not only that, it's costing us the lives of many brave men and women. So basically, when Osama bin Laden was discovered, so to speak, a week ago, 10 days ago, and there was this incredible SEAL attack, which is questionable, God only knows this would be the first attack on a mortuary that I know of by any special forces unit, and I have a lot of respect for the special forces.
So you are so convinced he died a long time ago. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Without a shadow of a doubt, he had Marfan syndrome. It's not, I am convinced, he died. I mean, it wasn't an issue. His number two man, George, is literally was El Swahiri, who's still there, and
right.
He's a physician. And he's a physician who's an expert in the area that he really required was health and happiness. So, I mean, my point is, it's not only I'm convinced that the records are there. You can check the records in Dubai. It was reaffirmed, I think, in CBS reports that he had been seen by a doctor and he had been seen 6 months prior to that.
Well, what I found interesting in this so-called raid, Steve, was not one report of a kidney dialysis machine or anything like that. All they've talked about, computers and hardware and stuff like that. But you would think that if the guy was that sickly, there'd be medical equipment all over the place. And I haven't heard anything about that. Have you?
No, but you're right, George. The two aspects to that. Number one, when there is a covert operation, let's assume it is a covert operation, somebody attacked, whether it was the SEALs and they want to take credit, that's fine. But I find it a little bizarre that a special unit that's covert suddenly comes out publicly and announces itself and describes every feature about themselves and the attack. In part, that's done in the intelligence community to obfuscate or to distort the picture so that, quote, an enemy won't know what really happened.
So this Pakistani, though, who says, hey, that's my neighbor, Akbar. That wasn't Osama bin Laden. I know the guy. He might be telling the truth.
Him.
Yeah.
That's more credible to me than telling me that you attacked Osama bin Laden and you shot him in the face, which would be a little hard to do considering he's been dead for 10 years. And then, you know, the storyline doesn't make sense, George. I mean, on the one hand, we don't want to show you the pictures, but we've seen the pictures. Only a few can see the pictures, but not you, the American public. On the other hand, we'll show you what it's like to shoot somebody in the head. I mean, what happens in the intelligence community is you have to have a very credible story. The story has to be, it's like the movie business. A lot of your people have been in the movie business, the entertainment. Unfortunately, I don't mean to trivialize it, but intelligence is not an accident in terms of the fact that many in the intelligence community have been writers, people who are in entertainment. One of the most famous spies was David Niven.
So this could be the acting out of a script, basically.
That's correct. And you hit it on the head, George. The fact that you are in the 818 area code, I know it well, in the Valley, it's really very much of a script. And what happens in the intelligence community is you better have a very good script. And that script better hold tight. There has to be a logical sequence. There has to be a beginning, a middle, and end. It has to be credible. Your protagonist really should start off being alive and not dead. And that's very helpful in a storyline because, God forbid, somebody like me or others will come out and know the facts. And it's not just me. There are others who came forth and said, look, Osama bin Laden's going to be used for political expediency sometime in the future. And our president bought it for whatever reason. That was a big mistake. I think the advice was very wrong. But I really resent the fact that we're being treated as if we were stupid here in the United States.
Steve, we're going to take this break. And when we come back, I want to ask you many more questions about this. And we'll get into more of these psyops. This is an incredible story. He's an advisor for the Department of Defense. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And our very special guest tonight is Dr. Steve Pachanek. His website's, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we are talking about events worldwide through his eyes and his experience. He is currently an advisor to the Department of Defense. And we will be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go with Dr. Steve Pachanek. Steve, first of all, many things to talk about, especially the latest situation that occurred Sunday night then. But, you know, you're an advisor to the Department of Defense. You've worked in government. Are your beliefs affecting your career? I mean, are there people in government saying, hey, what the heck are you saying?
I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are a lot of intelligence operatives listening to me now and before in Alex Jones. And I just want to clarify, I was an advisor on a volunteer capacity. Even after 9/11, I came in. I won't tell you which units or which anyone, but basically I volunteered my knowledge and went overseas and to help out our own country in a situation that they found themselves in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So I don't advise anymore, but The issue isn't anymore whether I do or don't. I've had the experience. I've been with, five different presidents. The issue is really, why are we having this again? Why is PSYOPs occurring in the United States and once again with another president? And the issue is, the American public isn't stupid, and we're being treated as if we were stupid. Am I listened to, and do people think that, he's a conspiracy theorist? Well, that's wrong. I really don't belong in any category. But it's interesting, in the intelligence community, you basically get categorized as a way of diminishing your importance. Now, I don't really depend on my livelihood. I volunteer whatever I can to help my country in whatever capacity, usually the military. I won't specify what, but most of my life is really in private business, as you would have it or anybody out there in your audience. So the answer to your question is basically yes. I'm sure many, many operatives are listening. They're interested, not necessarily what I have to say, but the fact that I'm coming on your show. I went on the Alex Jones show, but I don't normally go on TV or give interviews to the newspaper. So the issue now is, what is happening? The Osama bin Laden story is a sad story for America, not in the fact that we killed anybody. We didn't kill anybody. He died from Marfan syndrome. What's really sad is that this has to be pulled off again as a PSYOPs technique at a time when a president found himself with very low ratings, low economic condition. We're not in a great economy, huge unemployment. And once again, the intelligence community comes in, and this is not all of the intelligence community, because we have 16 major departments, 14 of them are Army, and we have the CIA, and they're compartmentalized, and this doesn't include all the CIA. So you have to understand that the advice that a president gets comes from a certain group or a certain element. And to be using that advice at this point to come out with Osama bin Laden in a time when we really have crises in our hand. You have the issue in Libya. We have our own national security. Our biggest national security issue isn't not Osama bin Laden. It's not even the war in Iraq or Afghanistan. It really is at home, which is our debt. Our financial situation is not great. And our biggest national security issue, if you ask anybody in the military and you ask any of the generals or anybody I work with, they'll tell you the biggest national security problem is our financial situation. The budget in DOD, Department of Defense, has blown out of proportion.
Sure.
We have products and projects that don't belong there. We have an intelligence community that relies too heavily on electronics and not on human. The greatest asset that one can have in this country against terrorism, where, by the way, there is no such thing as a war on terrorism, because terrorism is a tactic, not a strategy, is really intelligence, human intelligence. That means penetration. And ironically, one of the best operatives we had was a woman who in the 1960s was studying in Indonesia and probably worked for the CIA and worked for the East-West Institute, which was funded by the CIA, and that was, ironically, the president's mother, and who had been doing a PhD and was a very brave woman. I mean, I don't know why the president never mentions this, but looking back at her history and what she had done, is no question that a single white woman going into a Muslim country in the 1960s had to be exceedingly brave.
That's dramatic all by itself.
Of your agents that, we had in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and that is really quite formidable. So why the President Obama decides to do a PSYOPs operation on the American public at this point in time, I have no idea, other than the fact we don't need it, we're tired of it, we're disgusted, and there's going to be a blowback.
Let me ask
the Republicans and Democrats.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Why didn't the Republican Party, let's throw a partisanship into this and make it a political issue. Why didn't anybody from the Republican Party say, the president's come out two Sundays ago, he's made an announcement that we got bin Laden. Folks, bin Laden died years ago. This isn't true. Why don't they make it a political issue? I guess they're trapped. They can't, can they?
Well, you have to understand the nature of a politician. You're not getting the bravest and most honorable people there in politics. Usually the people go into politics are those who really, by their nature, are panderers, and then they want to be liked. And if you want to be liked, you really have to make certain that you're going to be liked by the public and you don't stand out and do something as foolish or it seems as what I'm doing to you and saying to the American public, look, let's wake up. This is nonsense. And let's get ahead with our own budget. But the truth of the matter is we don't have an effective opposition. It really doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or Democrats. What we really need is a third party. And we haven't had a third party. Unfortunately, the Tea Party was co-opted by the Republicans or other elements. So, yes, this would be a propitious time for a democracy to stand up and say, look, this is not real. But we don't have that, George. And unfortunately, that's really the lesson that we have to learn, that whether you're Democrat or Republican really doesn't make any difference. You have a psyops or a stand down or a false flag on both sides.
And what about this theory, Steve? What about this one? What about this theory that we have a president who may have been set up? They may have duped him. They may have said, okay, he's right on the cusp. His popularity is waning. This could push him over the, this could just sink his administration. If we can convince him we've done this, that we found bin Laden, and later we leak it out that he died a long time ago, we'll make the president look foolish. Let's do it like that. Because I saw something two Sundays ago when he announced this, and he said, we've got the body. He didn't sound like a guy who knew we were dumping that body in the ocean. Could he have been duped?
It's possible. You know, George, anything's possible. One of the problems when you have a psyop scenario like this, which doesn't really unfold logically, internally, not from our point of view as the observer, is that it can go either way. And I think the president really did not understand the issue at hand, nor were his advisors very good on this issue, because this would never have happened under Bush Sr., or under Nixon, or under Reagan, or under Carter. It just wouldn't happen because the controls were so tight. The agency, although Carter had fired 4,000 personnel in the intelligence division, there still was Brzezinski and Cyrus Vance to run on top of it. At this point, you don't really have a very effective Secretary of State. You have an exceedingly effective Secretary of Defense, Gates, who probably should have stopped this from the get-go, but he didn't, and Panetta and others let it go through. The president bought it, and I think you may be right, but at this point, it's on my part, it's total speculation, but it would be really an incredible game of saying, okay, well, if the president's going under, then who's going to come in? And the Republican format right now is not all that impressive. You don't have candidates who really can come in. And quite frankly, the American public is turned off to Congress and the presidential elections. This would be more to the advantage of a storyline. I think you're correct. He didn't respond accordingly, and he really wasn't on top of the storyline. But it can go either way, George. But yeah, from my point of view, it really was a major faux pas, very dangerous to play this kind of game again.
And, you know, the so-called reports from Al-Qaeda basically saying that he's dead or bin Laden's son, possible set up, what might they be?
Well, it's all part of a psyops. I mean, the bin Laden family is known to have worked with the Carlyle Group. They're really very integrated into American economy. They still own a major construction company in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is very tightly connected to our intelligence organizations, and there are the real issue here is not so much Osama bin Laden. From a strategic point of view, this issue is really not that important. It's a tactical issue, and again, from an internal point of view, it's far more important that they did a psyops operation against the American public. But the real issue now is Pakistan and the destabilization of that area. And now we have a destabilization occurring in Syria, which we have to address very quickly because 878 people were killed, 9,000 have been arrested. Bashar Assad, who's also a physician, interestingly enough, we doctors occupied a lot of dictatorships and leadership positions in the third world and other places. And we're confronted with all kinds of issues that are destabilizing the Middle East, including the fact that Hamas has reunited with the PLO or Hamas, Fatah, and You have Egypt, which will shut off gas to Israel. And so all of these issues are mounting very quickly for us, not to consider, for example, this point where we have China as an issue and the economic rise of China and what Russia is doing in Central Asia. So we're tied down in a very serious tactical quagmire of our own making, when in fact we should be getting out of Afghanistan and Iraq and address the issues around the world, and most importantly, the domestic issue of finances and the debt issue.
What does your gut tell you about all of this, Steve? Is this are we on the cusp of some kind of major event again?
Well, I was asked that before. In other words, is there going to be another false flag and stand down? I will address the audience that's listening to me that's in the intelligence community, which is I would wish that you will not even consider that. If there is a false flag stand down again, that is going to have such a backlash in the United States. It will have serious, serious repercussions in terms of what I would consider really kind of a second American revolution. It may or may not be violent. I don't espouse violence, but I think the American public will have had it, because given the technology, the sophistication, and the fact that I think the American public is a lot smarter than what the politicians think, and we're not dumb rummies.
And, I agree with that. We are.
Well, but they're treating us like dumb rummies, George, and that can't continue. And with the access of technology at our hands and our ability to reality test all of these psyops operation, it's not working. And so I think the American public will really go into the streets and begin to protest, as they should have done in 9/11, but they may happen 10 years later.
Well, they could have avoided some of these discussions had they had a picture and a body, but I guess they don't.
Well, you know, a picture will be produced in a body, George, but that almost is totally irrelevant.
It is at this point, yeah.
Yeah, it is irrelevant, George, and think about it. I mean, they're going to produce, if they need to, a picture of something. I mean, quite frankly, they'll say, look, this is a picture of Osama bin Laden. This is what happened, in our being the government's point of view, but it's not credible. It wasn't credible to begin with because the storyline unwound so quickly, George. I've never seen anything like this before, and the American public just won't accept it.
No, I agree with you. I was on the air that Sunday night when the president made the announcement. We totally switched our programming to cover this event. And, you know, I had our main guest, I had her on only for an hour of a four-hour show. But when they then came back and said the body's been dumped at sea, I thought I was reading some kind of a joke. I didn't believe it.
And no, you're absolutely right, George. It's not a convincing story.
No, and the bottom line is, if you want to bury someone in Islamic tradition, you bury them at sea only if they've died on a boat. Otherwise, they're in the ground, their head facing Mecca. That's the way it's done.
That's correct.
Made no
sense. You hit it right on the head. So what it says, George, in effect, what you're saying is what I'm saying, and the American public saying, listen, if you're going to do a PSYOPs operation, get your facts straight.
Get it right. Yep.
Islam. Correct.
Get it right. Say he died on a boat, and then you can get away with it.
Well, whatever. That's correct. But the point is that, you know, the serious problem isn't the details of the story, because it's not credible. The real problem is, why did they have to pull this kind of story at this particular time in our country, when we need leadership, we need economic restitution, and really the ability to get our governments corrected. I mean, here in California, you have a huge debt. All the states have a huge debt. You got a $26 billion debt in California. I mean, in other states, we have huge debt. And nobody's addressing the issue of the unemployment problem. And we're not addressing the issue of the veterans who are coming home from these terrible wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then actually in your VAs and in Sepulveda and elsewhere, where they're not being treated accordingly. Physicians are being dismissed, and they're going to the lowest level of nursing care or Arab professionals, and the veterans are not receiving the kind of care they should be getting.
Do you believe it's very possible they raided that compound and it might have been an Al-Qaeda stronghold, but bin Laden, of course, as you say, was dead a long time ago?
Let me put it this way, George. Whatever building is next to the Pakistani Military Institute, the counterpart to that is you have to think of a building next to West Point Academy. Now, what exactly would you be raiding next to West Point Academy? A funeral home?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
No.
I mean, whoever set up the facts. Part of that is done in the world of psyops to confuse the enemy, but quite frankly, I think they confused themselves. There was no internal logic, and the American public picked it up.
These people who write these scripts that are then acted out by the world using the media and everything else, I mean, they must be trained in all kinds of incredible things.
Well, that's one of the issues why I came back to the fact where my training began. I'm not saying I'm better than, but I'm just saying I'm different from. The training that occurred in the 70s and 80s that came out of the national character studies and psychology, many of the people you have right now in the intelligence community, particularly in the CIA, most of them, about 70 to 80%, are really on contract. In the old days, I consider it the old days, we were really... in the intelligence community, the military, or the State Department, we're career. We weren't on contract. We didn't belong to L3 or Northrop Grumman or Boeing or one of your companies you would find in Century City or in Lancaster. Most of these people really are not there because of their livelihood. I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying most of them are on contract to the CIA. Excuse me, George. And
sure.
Many of them are really special forces that have been detailed from the military to the CIA in order to do what they call engage in actionable intelligence, which is another fancy way of saying they're in the hunt and kill business as opposed to the analytical and penetration building of human resources. So under Panetta, this has not been a very successful CIA. I would hope under General Petraeus that he would bring in some discipline and order and consistency and expertise, and that's really what I'm hoping for, because General Petraeus also received a PhD in international relations from Woodrow Wilson Center in Princeton. He's exceedingly a bright man, very experienced, and I don't think he would allow any of this to occur. And I think you have to hark back to the times of General Eisenhower, not accidentally, who really warned us of the increasing lethality of the military-industrial complex, by which he meant the intelligence community as well. And he had a very prophetic statement, which he said, you know, you need somebody of a certain kind of genius to really control the CIA. And I think he was correct. We have not had the most effective directors of the CIA over 20, 30, 40 years for many reasons. And unfortunately, they must be reined in. And who's ever capable, and I wish the best of General Petraeus, I think he will do, hopefully, an admirable job.
All right, Steve, stay with us. We're getting flooded with phone calls for you. So we'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM.